Thanks, George. Well, welcome here this morning. It's good here. Good to be with you here. I've enjoyed my time. Been here since October, and it's awesome to be able to love on and with a group of students. So that's been good. One of the things that I've done in the summertime, the last, many years, is I have found myself in Southern California in August. That's not a bad thing, and not a bad place to find yourself. Last summer I was down there again. I have taken teens on mission trips down to Mexico, and then we were on our way back, and we have our day off in Los Angeles. And so that was our rest day. And on our rest day, we give youth a couple of options. So one option is to go to Disneyland for the day. So if you want to spend a whole pile of money to get into a place, which is kind of like a mall where you spend more money to buy things, they could do that. So a few of them chose that. And the other group, and our day off was on a Sunday. And so the other group, we gave them the option to go to church. And most of them picked that one. So, you know, those were the good kids. But I think what was coming later, because after we go to church and have lunch, then we go to Huntington Beach and we spend an afternoon at the beach. So I think that was probably more the draw, and I really enjoy the beach. So there we found ourselves, Huntington Beach, beautiful, warm breeze, lots of sand, lots of people, and our teens went off. They went down by the water, and I and a couple of the other drivers, we went out on the long pier, and we went down there watching people surfing, watching people fishing, talking to some of them, and just enjoying the beautiful creation that God has made down there. Then we decided to go find our youth, and so we went down, we found them, and there they were on the beach. The pale kids were turning a nice red. And there was a group of future engineers building sandcastles. So after going around and spraying teens with sunscreen who were already beyond burnt, I sat down to watch the building. They had been at it for a couple hours, and they had had some pretty elaborate castles going on. Some had built a little farther up from shore. Some had built a little bit, you know, a little bit farther down. And so I sat down to watch, and I started to laugh because I noticed that something was happening, that the waves were slowly getting closer and closer. They didn't notice this. They were busy building away. And sure enough, the odd wave would roll up and almost touch the first sandcastle. And then our future engineers would go into high gear because they think, okay, this is just the Pacific Ocean. Me and my two hands and a whole pile of soggy sand, we're going to build a wall and we're going to keep out the ocean. So they went into high gear. And of course, that lasted just a little while, and then they kind of gave up. Their ambition ran out pretty quickly, and they experienced what they already knew, is that you cannot hold back the ocean. And they sat back and watched some of the other kids build their castles that were lasting a little bit longer. And they were having lots of fun, and that was the goal of the day. I enjoy the beach. Another thing I also enjoy is I enjoy watching home renovation shows. Anybody enjoy watching those? Yeah, I enjoy watching those ones. Flip this house, all those kind of things. The show where somebody buys an old dilapidated house that's completely falling apart. They put the least amount of money into it as they can to produce the best result that they can to get the biggest profit that they can. And at the end of the show, they tell you how much profit they supposedly made. So I watch those, and there's always, because I think it's made for TV, there's always those moments where they got to call up the investor because there's a problem. And the problem is going to slow them down, cost them lots of money, more than they budgeted, and it's something that they must do. The most expensive fixes are often the ones where a foundation issue is discovered. Why? Because the foundation initially was hidden, you couldn't see it, and when they started taking things apart, it becomes apparent that there's a big problem. And the problem, if it's in the foundation, is one that's going to cost you a whole lot of money because it's going to be a big expense, and it's something that has to be fixed. So they fix them. At the end of the project, when they have the open house, no one is impressed with the amazing foundation fix. Why? Because even though the foundation sets up the rest of the house, nobody really sees it. If you got a solid foundation, your windows are going to work better. Your doors are going to shut. The water isn't going to come in when it gets when it's rainy. Breeze isn't going to blow through your house. And if you don't fix that foundation problem, you're going to have perpetual problems that are just going to continue along. Now, you may have never experienced the joy of building a sandcastle in Southern California. You may have never renovated a house and been caught by some unexpected surprises. However, all of us, especially if we have a little life behind, can think of times when it felt like the foundation of our life was shaken. My marriage is in trouble. Your boss lets you know there are employee cuts coming and you were the last one hired and you're living check to check. A health scare. The doctor needs to see you as soon as possible. Or those devastating words that I heard when I was a teenager and deeply in love. You're like a brother to me. Girls, you got to come up with something better than that. That one just hurts. You see, some things don't matter. Building sandcastles, not so much. Foundation of your house, a little more significant. Other things, the things that we are building our lives on, matter greatly. Because if your foundation is not set on a solid foundation, the results can be catastrophic. Paint may be able to cover up a faulty foundation, but the true test of a foundation is when pressure is applied to it. When weight is pressing down, how much weight a foundation can bear is determined by that by what that foundation is made of and what it is set on. And just as a solid foundation is key to a good house and saves you a lot of trouble, having a solid foundation from which we live our lives on and from is essential. Jesus knew this very well. He knew life would at times be heavy and at times seemingly unbearable. And in those times, we may wonder how there are those times where we may wonder how in the world are we ever going to get through this? Jesus knew that. This was the issue so close to Jesus' heart. Jesus cared deeply about people's lives. And he addresses how to live a life that won't crumble or crater under pressure. If you are feeling unstable, a little concerned about your foundation, there is great news for you today. You are not alone. And the best news ever is you do not need to be alone. We are going to pick up the story of Jesus early in his public ministry. If you are reading through the book of Matthew, we read of the birth of Jesus, a miraculous birth. We have a little bit of his beginnings, you know, special people come and visit him. His parents have to flee to Egypt to save him from Herod and what he was doing to children there for a period of time. And then he comes back from Egypt and lives in Nazareth with his family. But in the Gospel of Matthew, we pick up his life when he was about 30. And Jesus had about three and a half years of public ministry. We connect up with Jesus, John the Baptist. He's baptized there. He goes into the wilderness to be tested. And then he begins his public ministry and he calls people to follow him. And so as he's going along, he's starting to call his disciples to follow him. And as this was happening, people were impressed with Jesus to the point where large crowds started to follow him. And so he's got all these people following him and he heads out a little ways and he goes and sits and begins to teach. And it's a teaching that we know as the Sermon on the Mount. And it's found in Matthew chapter 5 through 7. And Jesus begins to teach. Now we might be thinking, and he's teaching about what his kingdom is supposed to look like. And what it looks like to live in the kingdom of God. Now we might think, okay, Jesus had the Old Testament or the Hebrew Bible there, and the rules for that Jesus had or that God had were already laid out for how we are to live. And the Ten Commandments, but actually there was like 603 other ones that were they were supposed to follow as a nation, and they knew a lot of those. So we might expect Jesus to say to these people, listen, you're familiar with these laws of Moses that were given. You know, those commandments, let's tighten them up. We can do this. The problem was that for all the years that they had had these commandments, they had been unable to follow them. As a nation over their history, they had an abysmal track record. Most of the Hebrew Bible is the story of God calling a people to follow him, long periods of them disobeying, oftentimes of oppression and exile into other nations. Jesus, God letting them do their own thing and experiencing the consequences. And then Him calling them back to Himself with little response. We're going to look at just a couple verses of what was going on. So this is Jeremiah. Jeremiah was a prophet in the Old Testament there. And this is what he's saying about God's people. Their tongue is a deadly arrow. It speaks deceitfully. With their mouths, they all speak cordially to their neighbor, but in their hearts, they set traps for them. Another one, Ezekiel 33:31 says this, "My people come to you as they usually do and sit before you to hear your words, but they do not put them into practice. Their mouths speak of love, but their hearts are greedy for unjust gain." God's people had failed miserably. They were to represent God to the nations around them. All the nations around them were to be able to look at them and say, wow, their God is different than all the other gods that they served. And yet, when the other nations looked in at them, that wasn't happening. And the nation of Israel often looked more like the nations that it was supposed to be a representative of God to. They were a holy nation that was supposed to live dedicated to God. Now, as you read through, or if you're reading through Matthew chapter 5 through 7, we hear Jesus describe what His kingdom was to look like and how people in His kingdom were to live. Jesus begins, and you'll be familiar with some of these, but you can read these throughout the week. Jesus begins to work through His message, and it sounds like really good news. It seems to be that the poor and not the prosperous were the ones that would win. The humble, not the haughty, that get in. Those that hungered for righteousness, not the self-righteous. Those listening to Jesus were, from the most part, not part of the in crowd. So this was good news. Many of these people lived on the edges of society. And you have to love a God, even if you don't follow Him, but you have to admire a God whose heart is for the poor and the unimpressive. Who did God first announce the birth of Jesus to? Shepherds. Those people that were very low in the social structure. But here is a large crowd of people that really didn't matter. They had little. They were farmers, fishermen, day laborers, the sick. They were the struggling to get by. And if you follow the story of Jesus, He had a huge heart of compassion for the outcasts of society. But it didn't matter. Even if you were wealthy or had status and influence, Jesus' call was to come, repent, and follow Him. But listen to Jesus' standards. You have heard it said long ago. So He's referring back. And if you go through those passages, you'll find a whole bunch of them. But we'll just pick up a couple. Do not murder. You guys have heard that one before, right? Do not murder. So you're taking the test. Okay, do not murder. It's like, yeah, got that one. Haven't murdered anybody. I'm good. And then Jesus clarifies the true intent of that commandment that He'd given long ago by saying, anyone who even is angry with his brother and thinks evil thoughts toward them, he is guilty of this. You have heard that it was said long ago, do not commit adultery. Yeah, I'm good. I haven't done that. Jesus clarifies it by saying, you missed the point. Anyone who looks at someone with lust or with inappropriate desire, you are guilty. You have heard that it was said, love your neighbor. Leanne and I, we live in our neighborhood. We love our neighbors and our neighbors love us. It's great. But then He says, so love your neighbor, hate your enemy. Well, I don't hate a whole lot of people. I don't know if I hate anybody. And I don't know if I have a lot of enemies. But Jesus' command was love your enemies and pray for them. Jesus was teaching and showing them how far they were from what His kingdom was. But Jesus had good news for them. But good news is only good if there is bad news. Jesus' teachings didn't seem to faze this crowd. They were so far out of the loop, yet they were amazed at His teaching. And as this significant teacher takes significant time to be with them and to teach them, this group thought this was the most amazing teaching they had ever heard. So after Jesus has painted a picture, a clear picture of what it looks like, what His kingdom was to look like, He wraps it up with these closing words. And we're going to see those here. I'll read them. It says this, therefore, Everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rains came down, the streams rose, the winds blew and beat against that house, yet it did not fall, because it had a foundation that was built on a rock. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, the winds blew, beat against the house, and it fell with a great crash. When Jesus had finished saying these things, the crowds were amazed at his teaching, because he taught as one who had authority and not as the teachers of the law. Jesus was calling them to follow him. He says, anyone who hears these words of mine, his words, and lives them out. How is that possible? Jesus was calling people to follow him, to live what his kingdom was to look like on earth. And yet, as we follow the story of Jesus and the life of Jesus through the Gospels, here we have large crowds following him. But as you progress through the story of Jesus in the Gospels, you find that the crowds over time start to disappear. They start to leave. They start to dwindle until Jesus finds himself with a group of people we call his disciples. There's probably others around as well that were following him. But it goes down, and as Jesus gets towards the end of his time here on earth, there's just a few that are following him. And he intentionally spends more time with his hand-picked disciples. But when we follow it to the end, which is, we're going to remember that at Easter coming up here in April, even Jesus' closest followers back away in his time when he needs those around him to support him. And Jesus finds himself all alone. Even Jesus' closest disciples failed him, and Jesus is put to death. Where were the crowds? Where were his faithful few? Was that the end? For his disciples, it sure seemed like it. Those crowds that were amazed at the teaching, and they were gone. The teacher was dead, and the teaching's unattainable. What next? But God wasn't done yet. We get a little glimpse, if we go back in the Old Testament, in Ezekiel 37, 26, 27, 593 years before Jesus was born, Ezekiel, or God, whispers of what was to come and what was needed. It says in those verses there, I will give you a new heart and put a new spirit in you. I will remove from you your heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh. And I will put my spirit in you and move you to follow my decrees and be careful to keep my laws. Ezekiel was talking to God's people at that time, but it also had implications for farther down the road of what was to come. I was at the gym the other day. I mean, you guys know that I work out, right? anyway, I was at the gym the other day in the changing room. And I heard these two guys talking. I heard one, I could see one guy, but I couldn't see the other guy. And the one guy is like, oh, I haven't been here for 3 weeks. And the guy around the corner is like, well, where have you been? He's like, oh, I had shingles. Like, shingles are horrible. 3 weeks. Went to the doctor, and he says, have you looked at your back? And the guy's like, no. He looked at his back, and it looked like somebody had whipped him. So he was in a lot of pain, hadn't been to the gym. So the other gentleman asked him, he's like, well, did you get your vaccination for shingles? And he's like, no. He's like, wow. He's like, ever since I got my heart transplant, I get the vaccination because I got to be really careful. And I'm standing there going, wow, I've never knowingly met somebody who's had a heart transplant. So I kind of backed up a little bit to see what he looked like, and he actually looked normal. And I don't know what I was expecting, but I started thinking about that. Here was a guy with a new heart. Without it, he probably wouldn't have been there. How did he get his heart? Someone had to die. Someone had to die so that this guy could live. You see, as we figure out how to live out our faith, how do we live out the words that have been given to us to follow? We, like the Israelites of old, can't do it. Why? Because we need new hearts. And the only one that can give me a heart that transforms my heart so that I can love my neighbor and forgive those who do me wrong so that I can live out the kingdom life is Jesus. Ezekiel whispered that. 500 years before. I have a number of favorite passages, as you may as well. One of my favorite, and they change all the time depending on what I'm reading. I have a new favorite passage all the time. But one of my all-time favorites is found in Ephesians, just the whole chapter, chapter 2 of Ephesians. And Paul is telling the Ephesians there to remember that they were dead in their transgressions and their sins, in which they used to live. And then verse 4, but because of His, God's great love for us, God, who is rich in mercy, made us alive in Christ, even when we were dead. Someone had to die so that we can live out the kingdom life. And that someone was Jesus. The only hope we have, or Jesus is saying that if you want your life to stand in the midst of the storms of life, our only hope is in Him. He is the foundation that we need to live our lives from. So my question to you today is, how's your foundation? What are you building your life on? When you've experienced the pressures of life, and most of us have, if you haven't, they're coming. You're going to experience testing. You're going to experience pressure on the foundation of your life. And if you have a solid foundation built on Christ, you will be able to stand some of the forces that come against us. My guess is that if you are standing on a solid foundation, it is because somebody has been a foundation builder in your world. Everybody just take a minute or two. If you're following Jesus, think back in your journey and go, who are a couple people, maybe way back there, maybe even now, that have been instrumental in pointing me to Jesus so that I follow now because of what they invested back here. One of the neat things I get to do is go out for lunch with some of these, some of our leaders and stuff. And I was out with one of our young adults the other day, and my question always is, so what's your story? And I get to hear their story of how they met Jesus. And this is a 20-something year old guy. And he goes, when I was 5, I had a teacher in my Grace Kids. I don't know if they called it Grace Kids back then, whatever. And it was Mrs. Schultz. I don't know if Mrs. Schultz is here today. I know she makes great flowers. Wonderful lady. But he said, she was huge in my life. She may not even know that. But what was she doing sitting with a group of 5-year-olds, telling them about Jesus? She was helping. She was building an appropriate foundation for them as a 5-year-old. Right now, we have a whole bunch of people in Grace Kids that are working, or some in the nursery too, some with the 2, 3, 4, 5, 6-year-olds. They are working with our children. What are they doing? Well, they're specialists. They're elementary foundation specialists, helping these children learn about Jesus so that they can put their trust in Him and start to build that foundation. They're foundation specialists. That's what I call them. And they're awesome. The exciting thing about being part of this group of people as we seek to follow Jesus is that if you are a follower of Jesus, He's given you a gift or an ability or a talent that you can use to build His kingdom here. So whether you're working with children there or you're doing administrative stuff behind the scenes, always think you are part of building a foundation in people's lives. See, where am I going here? I have no idea where I'm going. Are you guys following though? Okay, good. All right. So the other thing is, let's go to the next slide here. So I think we're covering some of this. Who are you building into? Whose foundation are you building into? Whether you're mom, dad, grandpa, grandma, caregiver, friend, we all can be building into people's lives. Our youth leaders here, there's some over there, some over here. Some of our high school students are working with our junior highs and caring for them. That's amazing. Randy Schulzer, he's up here doing a youth worship band, building into their lives. All of these people are foundation specialists in their area. One of the things as I was coming to this church here is George asked me if I'd meet with the leaders. This is before I ever started. And so I went upstairs there to the youth room one night, and there was about 9 or 10 people all sitting there on couches staring at me. Didn't know any of them. And I'm not very impressive, but apparently I was supposed to impress them. But I was impressed by them. And one of the things that really impressed me is I looked off to my left, and there was a couple there that was sitting there that was older than I was. And it was Bob and Darlene, who work with our grade 12 students. Are they the best? Anybody out there been impacted by their life? Yes, absolutely. They come on Friday nights. They love on our youth, and they're helping build their foundation. And it's good. So we all have a part in that. One of the other things that I've often seen, and maybe you've seen it too, is, and this I think more happens in the southern states, but times where there's floods. You ever seen those floods, and a flood that's just coming in and the water's continuing to rise? Lots of people have lost their houses. They've been washed away. But there'll be the odd house that's on a little bit of a hill, and the water's coming up, and they know that the water's going to go higher than that house. And so what do people do? There's a whole group of people that will get together. They get bags and they get sand, and they make sandbags, and they start to build a foundation around this house. About 5-6 feet out from the house, they'll build it all the way around. They'll build it up to couple feet or so, and then sometimes you'll get a shot of a helicopter going by, and it's taking a picture, and there's this house in the middle of what looks like a lake, and there's about 6 feet of green grass around the house, a whole bunch of sandbags there, and the water's all there. What a great picture. Because, you know, there's times in our life and in our journey with God when there's more pressure on our foundation than we can handle on our own. Many of you, many of us have been there. But that's when the people that are investing in your life come in and they sandbag your foundation so that you can stand when the pressures of life are more than you can bear. Scripture tells us that we're to bear one another's burdens. And that's one of the ways we do that. We come around people and we build into their lives. I have people in my life that have journeyed with me some many years. One of my guys right there, Jim, he's a sandbagger in my world. We've gone through lots of stuff. And he's been a guy who's been, sometimes he's shoveling sand into bags and he's like, I need more bags. This guy needs help. But anyhow, he builds a wall around me and he holds me through those tough times so that I can stand, so that my foundation doesn't crumble. We're to call our music. Adria, you can bring your team up here. There's a couple other little things that I want to encourage you with. As you here, we understand this maybe a little bit more. But who has God, or where has God placed you during the week, where you are the one, and maybe you are the only one who has a relationship with Jesus? And you're working with people, you know their lives, and not everybody's life out there is completely falling apart, but there's lots of pressure on everybody's life. And if their foundation doesn't have a solid footing, if it's not built on Christ, then who's holding them up? And maybe you are the one in their world that they need to experience Jesus' love so that you can live out. Our faith needs to be lived out. But it's not just lived out here. It's lived out there, wherever God has placed you. So think of somebody in your upcoming week where they need to be tangibly loved in a way that's appropriate for them, whether that's running a meal over to the neighbor, shoveling their driveway, or just sitting down with that grumpy person at work that nobody likes, but you're going to like him and love him because God has placed his new heart in your life, which allows you to live out his kingdom here on earth and make a difference in their world. And hopefully they can start to build, you can build a relationship where your foundation can grow. So that's my encouragement today. In the back of your boulders, there's a think on it. This is a little something to help you throughout your week to build your foundation as well. Grace Point has awesome classes that help you, centered class and other ones there. You can just ask at the Welcome Center. If you're wondering, how do I build my life more on Jesus? some of those classes will give you a really real tangible way, and you'll connect with other people, and you'll be able to journey towards Christ in a more meaningful way. So God bless you, and we're going to sing a song of response. And as well, if you've never opened your heart to Jesus, if there's no foundation that you're standing on, as we sing this next song, just say, God, I don't even know how to do this, but I open my heart to you. Come, make a difference. Maybe you've followed Jesus for a long time, and yet your heart has grown cold. And you need to reaffirm, like, yes, I'm going to build my life on Jesus. Maybe you could, that could be part of your prayer as we sing this song of response.